The veteran Scottish alternative rock band Simple Minds has returned with Big Music, their first album of new material in 5 years, 3.5 decades since their first real landmark album, 1980's Empires and Dance. The Glasgow Quintet, with frontman Jim Kerr and guitarist Charlie Burchill as their creative core, are rekindling the energy and attitude that made them one of the great bands of that era. The band scored a string of hit singles and are best known for their 1985 hit Don't You Forget About Me from the soundtrack of the John Hughes film The Breakfast Club. Their other hits include Alive and Kicking and Belfast Child. Big Music is their 16th album and was made with an array of collaborators, old and new. It's a great pleasure to welcome Simple Minds frontman Jim Kerr to this morning's roundtable. Jim, thank you very much for being with us.
Hiya, Joe. Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you with us. The album sounds great.
Thank you very much. The album's only been out a couple of weeks in the UK and elsewhere, but it's a long time since we've had such an overwhelmingly positive reaction. And one of the things people are saying is that the actual sound of the record is a lot of people are commenting on that, as you just did yourself.
It's interesting because there's a new sound to it, and yet it can be nostalgic at times.
It's true. I mean, it's almost like the sort of a loop or completing a circle. I mean, if you had said to us at the start of this, hey, let's make an album that, you know, combines all the good stuff from the past but sounds contemporary, everyone would say, yeah, you know, well, who's not going to do that? But saying it is actually easier than doing it, Joe, because you can't really go back to the past. The past was then. Technology's changed. The world's changed. We have changed. But somehow we did manage to get some of the essence. We called out some of the old ghosts from our earlier albums. But at the same time, the sound of the record seems very much of the moment. And so we're kind of ticking both boxes, which is great.
Take a song like Honest Town, which is a really haunting song and ultimately comes from the death of your mother, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're right. The words or the title of the song, it was a phrase my mom used. I mean, obviously very sad, but at the same time, there's a celebration of life in there. Basically, the song was written about 4 years ago. I had gone home to Glasgow, home as in I stopped working and touring to just be at home. We knew Mum was not doing well. It was only a matter of time. So I went home to Glasgow, and in true fashion, Mum didn't want me sitting around. She said, you know, you should be working and stuff. And lo and behold, I would hang around the house, Mum and Dad, during the day, and then in the evening, there's a kid along the road, a kid called Ian Cook, who, lo and behold, since then has formed a band called the Churches, and have had, I think, a top 10 album in the States. But anyway, Ian's from a younger generation was tuned into stuff like Simple Minds and other bands of our ilk, of our period. And we just started working, not really knowing what things would lead to. But Ian had this haunting melody that you referred to. And with regards to my mum, the week before she passed away, you know, sometimes this happens, I believe. She came downstairs, whereas she hadn't been mobile for a while. The light was in her eyes. She said, I want to go out. My dad was not for it. There was a snowstorm outside, and the radio was telling everyone to stay at home. She said, I want to go out. I'm going to a Christmas dance next week. I want to go into town and buy, you know, some clothes. I said, sure. So I didn't know what we were going to do, but we went in the car, and lo and behold, the journey from the south side of Glasgow into the city centre, we went through all the landmarks of her life and my life, where we went to school, the first house, where she met my dad, the factory she worked in, and she was sitting saying how much she loved her life and how much she loved Glasgow, and she used the phrase, she said it was an honest town, and sadly it was the last journey I made with Mum, but the song is a tribute to her and her generation.
Somewhere else.
In working on a song like that, does it help you work through the grief?
I think it does. You know, I think it does. I mean, people say, when I was young, I think I would have tried to avoid. I would try to avoid my own life within the music because I didn't think it was important. I didn't think it was special enough. You know, so a lot of those earlier records or the songs are fantasy situations. But as you get older, you realize that, you know, you probably should write about what you know. You should write about your experiences, and you should use your experiences as material.
You have a song in here, Let the Day Begin, which is a real anthem, but also in memory.
Yeah, geez, well, just to let you, for people who don't know, Let the Day Begin was written by a fellow called Michael Bean from a band called The Call, Oklahoma band. And when Simple Minds were touring, especially in the 80s in the States, one of the great things about those days was that The Call played with us on a couple of tours, and Michael being the lead singer and writer of the band, he became a bit of a guru to us. Michael was a bit older, and we just loved his band. We loved him. We loved his music. And Michael also passed away a few years ago. And we finally got back to do some work in the States last year. And we were, prior to going out in the rehearsal room, you know, we're saying how much we're going to miss Michael. And we said, hang on a minute, we should bring some of his music with us. Let's do one of his songs. And we thought we would maybe just slip it in at the encore or something, but it sounded so good. First of all, it sounded so good in the rehearsals. A lot of the crew, who are younger than us, were saying, oh, the new song sounds great. When did you write that? And we had to explain it was a cover. But anyway, the song became a sort of stalwart in the set over the last year and has ended up on the album.
I've read different things about your personal relationship with Don't You Forget About Me. Is that a song that you look back fondly on?
You know, I've got to be really clear about it. We love what that song gave us. How could you not? Actually, I'll retract and tell you how it came about, this idea that you might think we were in two minds. Again, for people who don't know, The Breakfast Club, Don't You Forget About Me, was written by a fellow called Keith Forsey for John Hughes' movie. We at the time had success just about everywhere else in the world, not quite in the States. We're doing well on college radio and all that. So the record company came with us and he said, look, there's this movie coming and we want you to be in it. You know, we want you to feature in the soundtrack. We said, great. And they said, and we've found you a song. Now, we're young men. Our pride was, we're like, hang on a minute. That was back then. No, we do our own songs. And they said, no, they made it worse. They said, no, you like this song because it sounds like you. And that made it even worse. You know, we said, hang on a minute. No one sounds like us. We sound like us. I mean, we were very precious. But anyway, Keith Forsey forwarded us the demo of the song. And I got to be fair, the melody was there, the lyrics were there. But not much else was there. It didn't sound that great compared to what we were doing ourselves. We were writing stuff like Alive and Kicking. So we said no a couple of times. And then eventually, under pressure, we met Keith. And lo and behold, we liked Keith more than we liked his song. He came over, we went to the pub a few times, and then there was a sort of feeling of, let's do the song. If nothing happens, nothing happens. If something happens, great. But no one thought it would go and have the success that it did, you know, number one in the Billboard charts. What's the downside of that? There's no downside, but maybe it's just the neck of the woods we're from. We then felt we hadn't worked for the success. So we were kind of, I guess we should just relaxed on it. And indeed, that's what we do now.
Do you think that it had more to do with the film that it was a part of and what that whole idea was saying, that iconic ending with Judd Nelson walking across the football field and putting his fist, pumping his fist in the air, and then the song Swells, that is what a lot of people were relating to?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think when it works, it's a combination of factors, and you just summed it up. I think, of course, no one knew at the time. I remember sitting in an empty theater in Leicester Square in London watching this sort of pre-edit of the film, and we didn't know this was Judd Nelson punching, and it was all going to work. We were just like, yeah, whatever. But it has become this iconic for a whole generation. In fact, such an icon, you even see it parodied now. That's when you know something's a real icon.
Right.
When you see it parodied. And that's, you know, that's when it really works, when the music, the emotion, the image comes together. And John Hughes knew what he was doing.
And that brought you incredible fame in the States.
Well, it certainly, you know, it. Then, if you remember back then, it was all about MTV.
Right.
And, you know, this thing MTV had come along, and suddenly it was on, and not only was it in every house, it was in every bar, every restaurant, not only in the States, but all over the world. And so it took us, as you kind of rightly say, from being a rather successful cult band, well, into the mainstream.
And that's where the stadiums and the that anthem rock really became.
We followed that up. You know, we were encouraged by that, and we went back to the States, and it was so great. You know, because you know, I don't know about anyone else, but we loved the guys we worked with, Jimmy Iovine, Bob Clearman. We loved working in the studios and New York. We loved being upstate and the Catskills, and you know, it was great being in America. Listen, you people invented this thing, after all. So it was great being around all of that. We just fantastic memories.
And then the history of the band is that after this, toward the late 80s and 90s, the band started to fracture a bit. And but what's remarkable is you were always able to sort of stay together in some formation. And as I mentioned, this is the 16th album. So you've always been able to keep it together and work in some form.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it got tough. I mean, if you look at in the 80s, from the end of the 70s to the late 80s, I think we did about nine albums. And then in the 90s, it was down to two or three. So that tells you something's not right. You know, the wheels were starting to come off. Some of the guys no longer, you know, had done it for 10 years, no longer wanted to do it. Now, I can't understand that, because I love doing this, but I've got to accept everyone's, you know, everyone's different, and not everyone's the same. Some people are sprinters, other people are marathon men. But between that, one thing and the other, and then just the other thing, you know, life takes over, and be great if life always went swimmingly well, but it doesn't always. Anyway, the net result was that, you know, the light had grown a little dim by the end of the 90s, and it had given us three options, actually. One was to just stop, give up. we could have done that in the sense we'd been well looked after. You know, we'd been well looked after, we'd been well rewarded. So, and we had done it. So even ego-wise, you could maybe say, well, we've done it. But there was this nagging feeling of, you didn't really do it, you know. You didn't really maximize your talent. There was more to give there. There was a feeling of when the going got tough, we kind of buckled. And that always bugged me. And then the other thing, you know, so what do we do? Do we just go around like punch drunk boxers because we don't know what else to do? That wouldn't be very pretty either. Or else, do you ignore Scott Fitzgerald's statement of, you know, there's no second acts? Well, he says there's no second acts in American life.
Right.
I like the narrative where the guy gets up off the canvas, you know, where the guy comes off the ropes. And about 10 years ago, we said, look, we're not going to give up. We're not only going to do this, we're going to make it core central to our lives again, because it hadn't been. And the last 10 years has been about kind of, to use a car metaphor, you know, it's been turning this rusty old thing, getting the engine going, turning it around the right way, getting it moving down the road and seeing how far we could take it. And you know what? Lo and behold, while we're doing it, we found, just like with classic cars, one minute you're in fashion, then you're wildly out of fashion, and then you know what? Suddenly someone says you're classic. And that's really been the story. But there's been a lot of work the last 10 years. You see, live's always been a different thing. Live, the band really kicks. And you might say, I would say that, but the general feeling is the band is second to none playing live,
yeah.
And that's been a great thing.
I've seen you have some recent DVDs of performances over the last year or two, and it's just amazing. I mean, you guys are amazing live, and the energy from the audience is incredible. From the shots of the audience, I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, my age who grew up in the 80s, but also new kids as well.
Yeah, what a pleasure, you know, what a thing to see that. I mean, it's the other great thing the last 10 years, of course, has been the whole social network thing, because it means
right.
that, okay, we might not have been visible in terms of mainstream media, but we could still feed the diaspora and grow them, and letting people know what we're doing, and people come to the gigs, and they bring their kids, or, you know, bring their friends, whatever, and I think last year was the most tickets we've ever sold, I think.
There's something about seeing you wearing jeans and a sport jacket and just taking control of that stage. You have great comfort on that stage.
That's because the top button of the jeans are a little loosened. Like, I'm an honest guy.
Yeah, well, you're
that gives me a little bit more control.
You move around a little bit more. It's comfortable. Sure.
Yeah, but you know, the audience can see it. They're with us. They know what's going on.
They understand.
They understand. They want you to look good, but they don't want you to look that good.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, you were mentioning, I think, when you were talking about Don't You Forget About Me, you were talking about, you know, and comparing it to a song like Alive and Kicking. Was that a song that you feel was sort of the band at its best?
It was a great moment, you know, it was a beautiful moment. I can't, you see, after Don't You Forget About Me going to number one, we thought, I remember producer Jimmy Iovine saying, how are you going to follow that? What are you, you know, you were really going to have to, we're really going to have to produce something. I mean, we had the demo of the song, it sounded good, but we needed an event record, an event song. I remember the morning, final mix, you know, we're up late, 2 or 3 in the morning or whatever, even more, I guess, was a summer morning. I remember walking back. It was getting light, walking back to the hotel in Manhattan from the studio. Sun was coming up, and I had my Sony Walkman with a track on it, and I thought, yeah, this is going to work.
Well, the new album is Big Music. It is now out, and it's just incredible. And, of course, it's available on all the various platforms, and you can go to the Simple Minds website and find out more as well. Jim Kerr, great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much for sharing with us. Very nice to
Lovely
chat with you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
A great pleasure. Thank you very much.
All the best to you. Bye-bye.
And to you. Again, Jim Kerr is the frontman for Simple Minds. Their new album is Big Music, their 16th. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.